For my
okay, well, this was your
note,
Shayna.
Bucks worth of gambling.
Shayna, you put this in. I didn't put this in.
I think it was extends. A late goal.
Oh, extends. Okay, hold on.
Maybe ends. Maybe I'm gaslighting
Sorry,
you guys
no,
again there.
That's my error. Okay,
I'm
three.
Gonna start
It's
putting
a
in
few times I
lies
don't
into the
have a
doc.
typo. Come on.
Too many men. Too many men.
Oh, that's way too many.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Too Many Men podcast. My name is Allison Lucan, and I am joined by the principled, standard-raising, no-shit-taking. I admire her so much for all of those things. Sarah Sivian. Sarah, how are you today?
If you're looking for a job, maybe don't use Twitter the way I use it. But you know what? I'll never stop myself. It's just like comes with the package. So we'll get into that. But I'm fine. How are we?
Well, I'm better now that I'm with you. And of course, also with the woman who makes this podcast truly what it is, the shit-talking, all-knowing, The Athletic's Shayna Goldman. Shayna, say hi.
Hi. That was my favorite intro yet. Shit-talking, all-knowing. I should get a business card that says that.
We'll get right on that. Put that in the store. TooManyMenMerch.com. Buy your own business card.
Buy my business card. You have to pay to have mine. To
buy Shayna's business card. All right. Well, let's get
omnipresent.
So many hyphenations. All right. Let's go. So Jean-Luc Grandpierre, who has two names, his first and last are both hyphenated. His nickname is the Hyphenator.
That's amazing. He's great.
That's a good one.
I know. He's so
good. It's creative versus like just everyone adding an ER to the end.
I know. Oh, so Logan Morrison got called up by the Seattle Kraken and his nickname is Lomo.
I like that.
It's so cute. Not that I should say he's cute, but like, you know what I'm saying? It's a good nickname. It's not a or a Y at the end.
Yeah. Well, like what? Logie?
That's bad.
Like that's a bit Loger.
That's bad. That's terrible. All right, let's get into it. Sarah, what time is it?
Time for the original sound. Bit of news.
A bit of news, my friends. Yes, here we are. Let's get into all the headlines that we want to talk about going on around the league. And there's nothing better to start with than the women's hockey team at The Ohio State University. Notice I don't emphasize the because that's fucking dumb. It's Ohio State University, people. But what's not dumb is Nadine Muzzarol and her team. For the second time in 3 years, they bring home the national championship, the first ever for this team at this university, these two championships. And in a wonderful little bit of, I love the tweet that the team put out. They put out the reverse card. Last year, Ohio State loses to Wisconsin in the championship game 1-0. This year, they win 1-0 off of a goal by the legendary Joy Dunn, Rookie of the Year in college women's hockey. Shayna, I know you were watching this game. Tell us why Ohio State is so wonderful.
For all of the reasons. I mean, first of all, you look at Wisconsin, what a powerhouse they are. You have Caroline Harvey, you have Lacey Eden, you have Layla Edwards. To go up against that team, I think, is super intimidating. I think 7 players are going to USA Camp for Worlds. So that kind of tells you just what they were going up against. But I love the way Ohio State plays. First of all, we love Jincy, we love Joy, we love all the Dunn sisters. We want to see them thrive. But Nadine Muzzarol is such a cool coach. Like, I see her behind the bench and I'm like, that to me is like she is everything and more. I want to see her get shots like I want her to stay at Ohio State forever because she's amazing. But like, I want to see her get big opportunities from here because I love the style of play. They are hard to play against. They are aggressive, you know, defensively. And while shorthanded, like she has a power kill. I know you wrote an amazing profile on her, but I think that they are so fun to watch. And the whole tournament was exciting, but that final, it gave you drama. It gave you everything you could have wanted from it.
Tremendous goaltending as well, particularly even in the semifinal. Clarkson's goaltender is, my goodness gracious, outstanding. Sarah, what were your takeaways? How much of the game were you able to take in with your schedule?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, with my busy schedule of what?
Well, you are busy. You're doing
things. I am. I just continue to love Coach Nadine. I love her. I think she's electric and clearly a winner. I want them to have the best of the best in terms of facilities and everything. And yeah, I would love to see that as the next step. They've proved more than capable of winning and being a powerhouse, and love to see it.
Absolutely. We are team hashtag build them a rink, because for literally now, I was trying to count the other day, 7-8 years, Ohio State has been saying, we're looking into it. I'm over this.
Yeah.
I'm over this. You have enough money to build a second waterfall in the fucking football team's locker room. Build the women with the championships a damn rink that's not 100 years old. All right, let's move on. So this is a little just an update in what has been going on in the ongoing Kyle Beach addendum situation with the Chicago Blackhawks, where a second John Doe did come out and alleged that he was sexually assaulted by the former team video coach, Brad Aldrich. The Chicago Blackhawks asked for that to be dismissed, and this was announced 2 days ago, Monday. A U.S. federal court judge has denied the request to have the case dismissed, so it does look like this second case slash investigation will move forward. I think that's important. I think it's very, very necessary that we understand all the implications and acts that Aldrich did, and that teams and people be held accountable so that these things don't happen in the future. Sarah, what are your takeaways from the court's decision? One of a few good ones, since we don't get many from high-end courts in the U.S. anymore.
I know. It's telling the way the Blackhawks try to handle this, where they're trying to get it thrown out. And I mean, I guess you fight for whatever if you're on that side. But the fact that this doesn't just go away because Connor Bedard's here, you know what I mean? Like, this is an ongoing, it's not people, maybe authors, maybe fans try to write this story as if it's over, or like it's a game and the game's ended and now it's a different era of Blackhawks. And it's just not. This is people's lives. And yeah, I'm glad to see the court handling it. And it just is an ongoing legal issue in people's lives. So I think you can't just look at the Blackhawks now and say like it's all over. Like, I think we have to keep paying attention to this.
100%. And you know, again, we've on this show, and I believe rightly, praised the Blackhawks for the things like how they handled the Corey Perry situation. So to your point, Sarah, there can be growth, but there can't be growth without addressing mistakes of the past. Shayna, when you heard this news, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, it's just nice to see situations keep progressing. I feel like sometimes it feels like the media gets really hyped about something. And like this one, I think there was way more involvement than we usually see. But then it obviously died down, and you don't want people to forget like the situation isn't over yet just because times have changed. This has passed. It's not being brought up every single day. And obviously it's not going to be at this point, but it's still a situation to follow. You still want to learn from it because hockey is still completely and totally fucked. And there are problems like this at all levels, all over the place. So you don't want to see it happen again. So hopefully people keep paying attention, keep learning from this situation. And yeah, we don't forget it just because it's a different era of Blackhawks hockey. They have to continue learning from it to be better. And obviously it's different people now running the show, and it's nice to see how they have progressed and how they're handling things. And hopefully they keep going from there so this never happens again.
Could not agree more. Well, on the flip side, my goodness gracious, stories that the media seems to want to pay an overly large amount of attention to. In what I honestly was like, well, this should just be a good story. A friend of the pod, Zach Hyman, who we love, has scored 50 plus goals. He's actually now at 51 for the first time in his career, 31 years old, had a tenure with the Leafs, was not re-signed there, and then signs with Edmonton, where he had had previously his other two high goal totals being 36 last year and 27 the year before that. But I was just happy for the guy. This is a guy who's had a great year, multiple hat tricks, stands up for things, isn't afraid to speak out, just plays in a great, fun way, goes to hard areas. And then there was the discourse. So before we get to the discourse, Shayna, from a pure hockey sense, talk about how meaningful it is for Zach Hyman to achieve this goal. I would have loved for him to do it against Toronto. He only got one of the two he needed. But how meaningful is this for hockey and for Zach Hyman? And what does it say about the player in and of the sport itself?
It's huge. First of all, scoring's on the rise, and that's more exciting for everybody. And we're also focused in on Auston Matthews and Sam Reinhart in the scoring race. That it was nice to see Zach Hyman just pull even with Reinhart. They've been going back and forth for 50 and 51. It's good for the game. It's also exciting for the game when it's someone we don't expect. We expect Pastrnak to be up there. We expect Matthews. We expect McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. We don't always expect Zach Hyman. And for him, I think this is really cool because it's someone that, yes, he benefits from playing with top players, but you look at it, you have to keep up with top players and you have to compliment them. Those are two totally different things than just being there. Anybody can just be in that situation. Look, Evander Kane was, and now he's on the third line flailing and getting a healthy scratch. Like, you don't just thrive because you're with Connor McDavid. You have to put in the work there too. And I think we've seen that from him. If we look back to 2013, for finishing talent, he continues to be one of the best with backhands above expected. And he led the league, I think, for 2023 and 2022. But in 2022, he had, I think it was 14 wrist shots below expected. He couldn't convert on his chances. So the fact that now he's a 50 goal scorer kind of shows he must have put in some sort of work to adjust what he wasn't doing right before, because he was in the right areas, but he wasn't converting. So I think it makes it all the more impressive when you put that context into it of his past seasons.
Yeah, I was honestly really happy for him. And there was originally the discourse, which I already mentioned, which is, you know, oh, it's another, you know, F you to the Leafs. It's another player. Why didn't he do this when he was here? And the Leafs fans were all up in arms about this. And then there was the discourse that Shayna has discussed about the fact that, oh, it's just because he plays with McDavid, which I'm honestly quite sick of, because if you watch this guy play, he does work hard at his game. And then the discourse took a weird turn where people were saying he didn't deserve the accolades. Even if he's 31 years old, there was too much privilege given. And I honestly, there was way too much hockey on yesterday, so I couldn't fully follow the whole thing. And we'll get to that later.
I wish I didn't.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, what do you want to share? And what do you want to share? I want to give you the stage too, but also more importantly, like, what should we be taking away from Zach Hyman's accomplishments from a narrative perspective?
Whatever the fuck we want, I guess. Like, I think, and I got the inside scoop from Besty Leon. I asked him what it's like to watch. I love this season Hyman's having. I feel like the way he's scoring, it's a combination of skill and, like, you have to be, like, breaking news, you have to be good to play next to Connor McDavid. It's not as easy as you'd think, right? Like, it's not like you got to have the hockey sense that he has. And Leon was like, he's such a smart player. Leon Draisaitl, like, he's such a smart player. But the discourse happened when, oh God, I didn't think I even watched the video from Andrew. Honestly, he said that Zach Hyman is, his career was brought on privilege, and people took that as calling out a Jew, an openly proud, hell yeah, Jew, for having this privilege that all other hockey players have. And I mean, I think that's valid, but in the state we're in right now with the war, it just got to complete, like, everybody's grifting, everybody's picking a side. Like, it brings out the worst people that are using that as, like, a way to bully people that may not have meant that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't know. I should have shut my mouth sometimes, because it's just like, I'm Jewish and I believe, like, everybody should be openly proud and Jewish. And I think we should look at the stereotypes that say, like, Jewish people are rich. Why is that bad? That's bad because it's like how Kanye says it's some type of cult. Like, that's a really bad, harmful stereotype. And it's just the way the discourse goes online, sometimes it's like people have been waiting for somebody to maybe slip up and say something stupid. And it was something extremely stupid. No matter who he called out for this, it was like the stupidest thing in the world. Like, he deserves to have 50 goals.
Like, well, and also, like, respectfully to your point, Sarah, like, show me the hockey player whose family wasn't well off with the resources to buy 18,000 sticks and 400 skates and replace windows when the puck goes through because the kid's shooting out in his driveway. Like, unfortunately, that is a barrier to the sport, is that a lot of these players came from well-off families, because that is what the sport requires right now.
It was random to go after him. So like he's just minding his business. Yeah. Everybody's like loving his story. And then it's like Andrew.
No, don't enjoy this. Don't enjoy his story. Like literally, it's crazy too, because like you think about it, how many stories do we hear about the players who don't have that? Like the Panarins of the world, right? There was the Portsline profile on that.
He's Jewish.
Those are just the few offs versus what you need to play. It's one of the most expensive sports.
And
like,
to
let's
be clear,
be realistic.
To be clear, we are not saying that makes that okay. This sport needs to be more accessible. 1,000,000%. It's
there
just
was
the
a
reality
way,
right now.
Yeah. There was a way to go about that discussion. And now this sets us back, because now you have Obi Cohen, who is my number one op, I think. He just, the way he's so nasty and goes after people. I feel sometimes like I need to be Robin Hood and I really should just shut my mouth, but I like have to go after him. I'm like, you're being weird. No, let's call this. I think I can solve the world's problems in one day or something. And it just comes out wrong sometimes. But like, he's been saying some really vitriolic stuff online recently. And I'm like, why does he get away with that? But
that's being nice.
Yeah.
I didn't see that tweet until you quote tweeted it.
I should have seen, and that's the problem. I should not be doing that. But
No. It's because I keep muting people.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get one slice of rice of peace. And this, I'm muting people because of shit like this. Yeah, like it shouldn't be all the time. Like I get it. Everybody has opinion. It's not like everyone wants to see my fucking opinion all the time, right?
Oh, but they do. That's so true. Oh, but they
I would love to see your opinion though.
Wow. This is what I need for my confidence. I'm going to go off on a tear tonight during the two games on the schedule. But like sometimes people just have to like insert themselves into this conversation and have such as backwards takes. And it's like, why are we going here? Why are we having this conversation?
It's because it was an in to give them an excuse to go there. And that's what gets me like so riled up, because I think there is a time and a place for this discussion, but it's not, oh, you can't speak up or you're anti-Semitic. I'm like, I am Jew. Like, it's immediately calling somebody out. Like, it's just, it's a really volatile time in the world right now. And I always regret speaking about it online, because it does affect me as somebody who like really has a nuanced, I think a nuanced opinion on it, and like a unique opinion on it. I just feel like it does, like the personal attacks come. I'm getting emails, but I'm getting positive emails that are like, okay, like thanks for sticking up for some Jewish people. I don't know. Like, I just, what am I like here? Like, I just don't need to be tweeting this.
The Jewish hero.
Think.
We never knew we needed.
Yeah.
See, last year when I
barely
went on
even
my
had a
rant,
but
when I
what
went
was
on
the
my
character
rant about
from Saturday Night Live, the Hanukkah guy? Remember?
Oh my God.
What was his name?
Harry.
Hanukkah Harry, yes.
Yeah. You remember last year's rant about how I need one dreidel on the ice?
Yes.
I didn't get it from a player, but I'm getting it
from Sarah Simeon.
Yeah, Sarah, my Jewish hero. We're the Jewish duo. No one knew they needed in the fucking NHL.
Yeah, worst Jew in the world, though, depending on who you ask. But I've never so fast gotten like doxing immediately. Like, I don't, that's this type of issue. And on a serious note, it's like, it's hard because I don't want to speak up, because like, oh, it's really tough and people have really solid opinions on it that, I mean, it's probably not great for any like potential employer. So I'll wait a week until I continue my job search probably. But like, it does concern me the amount people try to shut you down from saying, I don't think like there should be a war. I feel like it's so militant, like the responses, and they're just like instant. And I'm finding where you live. It's like, I didn't say anything crazy. I think if we can't have a discussion, what can we have?
Yeah. And it's hard on Twitter too. Like, 100%. I feel like that makes it that much worse. Like, you have 240 characters to express your opinion without making it 10 tweet threads. And even if you have a tweet thread explaining your thoughts, someone will pick the one and be like, here it is, it's wrong. Or you can't put like nuance in it or try to like, you do anything and people are so quick to jump. And with this, it's like 10 times worse. And it feels like the conversation, like the way it's been in hockey, is also so weird on top of it. Like, it has been. And like Colby Cohen has been part of the reason why. And like, they're promoting when that shit goes on Fox News. And then it's just like,
no, exactly. Nobody calls him out. So of course, here I come with my annoying ass, like needing to call him out. The urge to call him out.
blue cape with little menorahs and dreidels on it.
Oh my
new project is just about to drop when I get a new machine. Like, this is it.
All right. Well, let's move on to some other points-based news. And full credit to Shayna for this one, because I literally had to confirm what this was about in the show notes. But it was a big night for carbs, you guys. Pasta and bread both hit 100 points. Fantastic, Shayna. I love it so much.
I can't take credit for it. I tweeted it because they were within minutes of each. I literally, like, at a break, looked at the saw Pasternak hit it, and immediately someone said, like, "Ah, great night for carbs." And I was like, "Fuck, I wish I got that one. Like, I wish that came to me."
It's very good. It's very good. Well, let's give these players their flowers. You know, it's funny to me. I was able to cover Artemi Panarin for a few years, and I had a great respect for his game. And the past couple of years, it's kind of, the narrative has been kind of that it's been a down year, or he hasn't been playing up to his full potential. So it's really cool to see him now kind of get back in the spotlight. He's always flown under the radar relative to what I think he is as a player, in my opinion. And then I would say the same for Pasternak, right? Like, again, just a supremely talented player that we're almost taking for granted because he is so good consistently. Each of these players plays on a team in each of your backyards. So I'll have you talk about each of them respectively. Shayna, give us some joy for Artemi Panarin hitting 100 points.
It's so exciting for him. He's such an amazing player. I love getting to watch him play. He was fun in Chicago. It was a blast in Columbus. And to see now in New York, like, he's someone that I think you see brings a lot of energy when he's on the ice. There's little details that he's so shifty and he's so smart that it's always fun to watch him. And now, you know, we know him to be this elite player in transition and an elite playmaker. And it's always been interesting how, since he's been with the Rangers, they've kind of figured out where to put him on a line. And a lot of the time, the right wing has just been someone that's like, well, that's defensive support, but not someone who can necessarily keep up and complement a top player, because that, who knew, is hard to do. And you're seeing, I think, a big difference because you have Alexi Lafreniere on that right wing who's really picked up his passing game. And if you look at all three zones tracking, like, they have a nice visual of high danger passes and shots off high danger passes. And the two of them, Lafreniere and Panarin, are so far off together in one of the, like, most favorable spots because they're both setting each other up with really, like, nice passes to make their shots all the more dangerous. And obviously they're both benefiting from it. And we're seeing him pick up his shooting as a result, with Trocheck just being like a nice utility player in between them. And it's made for one of the better combinations he's had in New York. And I think you're seeing that in the results. He's still doing everything that we know he can do. He can hold possession and you know, fight everyone off pucks and hold the puck on a stick better than most. But now he's more willing to shoot because he has someone setting him up. So really great season for him all around. And now everyone's going to, you know, start whining about him in the playoffs and shit like that, as if he hasn't been good in the playoffs before. But that's another conversation.
Sarah, give us some joy and love for Pasternak, our pasta man.
First of all, the pasta man, the bread, the pastellini. That's what they call his kid. How cute is that?
The pastellini.
First of all, Trocheck, nice utility player, is literally, like, that's the perfect prototype way to describe him. That just, like, really satisfied me. But
he's having a great year. Everyone was mean to him last year. They didn't like him last year in New York at all. A lot of people, they were, like, bored with him because it's not flashy. But it's like,
I know, it's not. Until the playoffs, he talks more shit than anybody, and he will turn it on. But sometimes that'll end up in a penalty. But, oh, I digress. It's turned into the Trocheck show. Pasternak. Yeah, it's such an interesting predicament. I was ranting about this. What wasn't I ranting about yesterday? I feel like Allison said, him and Panarin don't get enough credit for, like, these seasons and these 100 points that they're putting up. And it's funny because somebody responded, I'm like, I don't think Pasternak gets nearly enough credit, whatever. And somebody responded, it's because people love, like, oh, a hard-nosed game, like a hard-fought, whatever. And it's like, I think it's interesting that Panarin and Pasternak both grew up poor, but they have really sharp skill sets. You know what I mean? So it's like, they have a rags-to-riches coming-up story. Like, I think, I don't know, like, the hard work, they've worked harder than anybody. But anyway, it's just interesting, right? I think Pasternak is very underrated in Boston, but maybe adequately rated in the rest of the world. But there's, I like just that. This notion here. People think He's been injured too much. I don't even know what it is. He's a point per game in his entire career.
He's injured too much. I don't
like
get that.
Sorry.
That like he wants to be. Like that's like a choice. These... Like I choose to be injured. What are we doing?
The but discourse also, like, is insane.
Has he missed? He hasn't missed chunks at it, like at a clip. Like I don't get that. It's not like he's someone that you know is only going to play 60 games a year.
I feel like people don't understand truly what he's brought to the team until he goes, because people have thought, oh, it's just Bergeron. Oh, it's just Marchand. Oh, it's Chara. Like,
right.
It's Krejci. Like, now that they're gone and he's still cooking, like, the pasta is boiling at speeds that nobody can.
Did you call him Krejci?
Yeah.
Is it Krejci?
David Krejci?
Krejci.
Yeah, Krejci. I can never do this. This is a bad one, too. He roasts me, too. He's one that, like, what did I say to him? I asked him a question like once and he was like, of course, you guys think you fucking know everything. I was like, oh my God.
I like that you play off when you say the names wrong. Like the confidence behind it, it gives us, this, like we have to take pause and go.
I'm gaslighting you. But with the Boston accent, it's hard around here with the Boston accent with Andy Brickley.
It's Krejci, is it not?
It's Krejci, but he could like David Krejci. He announces it in a different way. Don't blame me.
All right. Well,
anyway, pasta's good.
He's good. He's fashionable.
Congratulations to our all carb squad. We acknowledge their efforts. I put this in the notes because I just literally had this random thought post deadline. Like, do we realize we've just now never addressed the question of what ended up happening to Phil Kessel? Like, he went and he was practicing with Abbotsford. Everyone assumed the Canucks were going to sign him. And now here we are post-trade deadline, and Phil Kessel has left the building? Do we know what's going on? I mean, obviously, he's not going to play this year because he can't play in the playoffs since he's not on an NHL roster. But do we know what is Phil Kessel done? Thoughts?
Time to start another rumor about him. Maybe he's going to get some hot dogs in Vancouver. They got good sushi there.
That's true. But we don't know.
I have no idea. Nobody, there's no reports or anything out of what happened with that.
It just, like, it was a weird one because it, like, okay, would it help to have an extra scoring threat if someone in your top six gets hurt? Sure. But if he's not playing in the top six, which was he going to do if everyone's healthy?
No, he's a healthy scratch in Vegas.
Yeah. He's just not someone that would have made sense, I feel like, in their bottom six at all. So it was like, do you put the cap space there when you need it? Like, they're so up against it. It was like, I get it. He could go with Rick Tocchet, who has maximized his game better than anyone, but it's like, it could, like, if they had extra money, I feel like it would be one thing, but.
Yeah. Well, let's talk to one more thing that Shayna has alluded to, and it's driving me batshit crazy. And we have talked forever about not having staggered start times, but now the league has decided to take us up on our offer to challenge us and fuck us over one more time. And that is the distribution of games by day. I would like to recount the past couple days. Monday, two games. Yesterday, 12 games. If you have to work to cover one of those games, it literally becomes impossible to cover even half of those games on the same day. Today, two games, both within a half hour start time of each other. So there's not even an East game and a West game. What the hell is going on now? And why can we not get some even distribution, particularly when we should, because there are so many great narratives. Shayna, this is your passion. This is your cross to bear. The floor is yours.
Okay.
Okay,
you know
she's
ready.
It's
funny because last night I tweeted about this because I went to a
game.
Which
I couldn't see because there were too many games going on.
Exactly. I went to a game last night, which I would not have done if I didn't get handed tickets, honestly, because I knew I was going to be overwhelmed afterwards, right? Like, I am at intermission on my phone watching Leafs Devils. On the train home, I'm watching the Predators comeback.
Not watching a breakdown of a too many men penalty power play goal for the Kraken. Interesting.
I know. I really miss it. I need a clip of that, please. Okay. I get home and I'm like, oh, I'll watch a recap. And it's live coverage of the Shark Stars, which is the one game that really wasn't on my fucking radar. Love the Stars. Love watching them all the time. Not against the Sharks when I'm like overwhelmed at what I've missed. I'm checking Natural Stat Trick. I'm waiting for Sportsnet to put up their condensed replays. I'm so overwhelmed because I'm going to miss one game. And me, to do my job, and I know not everyone has this problem. If you cover one team, you can stay like your tunnel vision for that team. That's okay. But it helps to have perspective, and it's impossible to have it. Tonight, there's two games. Friday, there's one game. I get it for Easter Sunday completely, right? But it's overwhelming. These games are so important. Red Wings, Capitals is a huge game. If that got the national spotlight on Wednesday and they had more of a flex schedule, like that would be amazing, right? Because those are key games to watch. Boston, Florida is a big one to go head to head with. Then you have Winnipeg, Edmonton. Next week's schedule, which is nice, is a little more balanced. You have 8 games, 5 games, 9 games, which is all I'm asking for. I don't need double digit games. And that's why everyone made such a big deal of that frozen frenzy. Like, look, there's 14 games at once and it's all staggered. There's 14 games at once all the fucking time. It's not impressive. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, the NHL says we want Wednesday night to stand out, that's our night. That's fine. But load up your Friday nights and load up your Sundays the second football season ends. The last week of the season is going to be the same problem. It's going to be 13 games one night, 2 games the next. When these are important playoff games, and even if you're saying, well, the casual fan doesn't care, the last 2 weeks of the season, they probably do. I'm sitting in the stands last night hearing everyone around me talk about the playoff race and the Red Wings game and checking the score for the Caps and wanting to know what's going on with the Panthers and the Hurricanes. Like, that shit matters. So don't stack up every Eastern Conference game at the same time. It's just ridiculous. And I know people are quick to mention, like, well, a lot goes into schedule making. You know, the arena availability and what's overlapping in the area. I'm not a fucking idiot. Actually, I wanted that job very badly. I have a goddamn master's degree in sports business. I know all about event management. I get that. You have to handle that. That's great and wonderful. But even still, if you redo it and go through the schedule, it still doesn't follow the pattern. They want this. And it's just bad for the fucking game.
Sarah, that's what I wanted you to comment on too, is like, yes, every fan is probably going to start with an interest in their local team and follow that team the most of all. But are we missing opportunities to grow the game? Because a lot of fans at different levels of following the NHL are not able to catch up on the bigger narratives that are going to endear you to this sport as a whole.
Yeah, it's like when Shayna makes her concession that maybe the casual fan doesn't care. And then, of course, she says, yes, they do end up, they don't have a chance to care. They don't know what they could be caring about. And then my second year covering the whole league, this is the biggest challenge that I 100%. Didn't even, I guess I wasn't thinking about. Like, of course, I have so much more respect for national writers now that I think about, like, maybe they get one thing wrong. They can't, first of all, you can't watch every single game, even if they were spread out. Second of all, it really is like 14 games at once. So I give them a little more lenience. I mean, there's not really an excuse if you're in that title, but at the same time, they make it impossible. And then not to mention, if I'm trying to watch the games at the bar, that's not happening. Like, they'll either have Nesson, so it's just the Bruins every right. single time, or they'll have like basketball on. Like, it's right. just... they can't play every single game at once. They need to invent that bar. I go to that hockey bar. I guess they have one in New York City called the Canuck. Shout out Julie Stewart Bings, who goes there. But anyway, I think
it's still overwhelming, though.
Yeah,
it's well, and overwhelming. Someone, keep in mind, watches multiple screens at once always. Mm-hmm. There's like, you have to balance your brain doing it and try to. There's still times I'll have multiple games at once and that game ends and I'm going back and rewatching and noting what I need to go back because I missed.
Well, at the very least. Else and go.
The worst thing too is, like, unfortunately in the US at least, we don't have a good recap show. The only thing we have is NHL Network, with which, if you have it, is a league sanctioned recap. So you're not necessarily getting all the actual things mm-hmm. that happen in the game.
Literally.
So then you have to literally. Go onto Twitter and see, like, oh, someone's talking about this hit or someone's talking about this fight. And then you have to Google that and hope that someone clipped it or put it on Twitter or that it's in in a blog article somewhere so that you can actually see the full narrative of the game, because those things do matter versus just here's the goals and here's what happened.
Yep. I've had to be honest sometimes when I'm going to, like, during the trade deadline week, I was at 3 Bruins games and then I had to write like one thing about the whole league. I was like, I need a little more time to do this because I couldn't possibly have watched all the games 100%. At once. And I'm not going to lie to the audience about it, but it really is like, it's a daily challenge in my life. I'll even 100%. Try to go to the bar to be like, maybe I'll watch a few at once, and that never happens. And I'm just drinking, and it's like I'm not even watching the game.
Because it's at all.
We are people who want to be up on it. Like if you are casually trying to, you just be like, screw it, just show me the scores. And this is when seriously the West Coast the East Coast bias becomes a real thing, because you wake up and all you have time to do, or maybe interest to do, is you look at the scores, and the scores don't always tell the story of every game. And it just skews perception of so many different things.
I had to look myself in the eye and be like, girl, you have not watched one St. Louis Blues game all season. 100%. And you need to change that. I've watched like 5 recently. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to keep shitting on them. Right. Like, if I haven't seen a game. Yeah. So I need to know what's going on.
And I think the East is so much harder to keep up with, because you see those 7 o'clock. I love, you know, like 9:30 starts and forward. Cause I'm like, good. At least there's only 2 or 3 games on at once. Except for when the Western Conference team's coming east, and then I want to rip my hair out.
That's not true. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when the West stays in the West and you have like those home games, it's like, thank goodness, because you can kind of like breathe and go through them. And
but you
it's
say
not...
that I can't. I have the same problem you have in the East.
Exactly.
There's your bias, Shayna Goldman. I see you.
Well, also, like if you're working a game too, like if you're not working a game and there's a 10 and a 10:30 on, versus 7-7s, it's like, okay, like there are some nights I feel like the West can be easier to follow. Not the Central, but like the Pacific can be easier to follow. But it shouldn't be this hard. And then like, I know some people get upset when you're like, well, you should stagger start times. Like, no, I'm not even going there yet. Like, would I like a 7:15 or 7:30 start once in a while? Absolutely. On a weekday, I understand why games don't start later. Like the Islanders are 7:30 because it works out with the train schedule and it's more convenient that way, but that's the minority of it. And you don't want a 7:30 start if you want to bring your kids. But on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there's no fucking reason for it. And God forbid you decide to have a life on a Saturday night.
Honestly.
Right? You can't.
God forbid.
I know,
literally,
I know Fridays
God forbid.
Are my opening.
Yeah, poor boyfriend. I'm like, can you next game?
I know. Honestly,
like I'm from Texas.
We have a game every other day this month. It's a crazy ass schedule month. And then like when it's off days, Steven will be like, can we do something? I'm like, no, I have to watch. I need to watch like 18 games that I didn't even catch up from yesterday either.
Really?
Well, let's move on.
And then
on.
If you're behind it, it snowballs.
Let's move on to the actual hockey. To the stuff that we actually
we
were
talk about
to
hockey that we could take 1% in of.
So on to the hockey that we need to talk about. Shayna, you mentioned this one. This one is an interesting one that, guess what, shocker, I didn't get to see because I was working, but of the 806 games yesterday, truly a pivotal match. And we're going to go through these kind of quick here, but Washington and Detroit, it was a must win for Detroit, who is chasing Washington, the team that no one expected, who's currently in a wild card spot. Detroit was behind them. Washington comes back with the OT win. So now Washington remains in the second wild card spot. Detroit 2 points back. Washington has a game in hand. Sarah, what do you make of this game specifically? This is a situation. The Kraken went reeling after they lost a similar game to Vegas a couple weeks ago, and it ended up kind of pushing them out of playoff contention because they couldn't get their feet back under them. What do you make of the Red Wings after this loss?
God. I guess they're showing us who they really are. It's been such a roller coaster all season. And it's like the way you always go back to, I think their confidence got really lost once Larkin got out of the lineup and they started playing poorly. They really are like really riding on his back. You look at the lack of 5-on-5 goals from Alex DeBrincat. I think that's been pretty damning. I love him as a player, but I mean, he's been cooking on the power play, but he's needed to do a little bit more. They haven't had, I don't know. I love kind of not an entire upheaval of a team, right? When you're talking about the Yezer plan, but you wonder if, I mean, like Patrick Kane is just not cutting it for me in terms of star power for a playoff run. You know what I mean? Like you look at who could they go out and get. I like that they didn't necessarily do anything at the deadline, but I think it's an acknowledgement that they just aren't there yet. They might still sneak into the first round, but it's getting like slimmer and slimmer. If they do, I could see them maybe going on a Cinderella run because it's like, well, fuck it, we're here. But they don't really have the power to like be a confident team in this like slate of other teams. It's going to be such a tough competition.
Yeah, they say we keep rooting for you, Detroit, but you keep falling just a little bit short. Shayna, a team that isn't falling short in their post U2 era is Nashville. This is a game I know you were able to watch, and this is another wild one. Nashville is now at a point streak of 18 games. They came back from being down 4-1 to Vegas to win that game. They're ahead of Vegas in the wild card spot. Both teams now with the same number of games played, and Nashville has 4 points on Vegas in a Western Conference where seeding is going to be huge in terms of matchups, because this is going to be some big boy teams going up against each other in the postseason. What do we make of Nashville? I know we talked about them last week, but what do we make of them now?
You know, it's interesting. Like Saturday was Predators, Red Wings going up against each other in like a hell of a game. And these were two teams at the same time who saw their playoff odds just surge, and one ran with it and one kind of fell apart. The Predators have been so good this year, and it's not just one thing that's working for them. Like UC Saros had some serious, serious struggles in January, and you see he's found his footing. Kevin Lankinen has been excellent as their backup, so they're getting that stable goaltending. But the biggest thing is their 5-on-5 play. Like since that game where they completely ate shit to Dallas, they are top three in expected goal generation and top three in expected goal suppression. Like they are doing everything each and every night. And like, this was no, last night's game was another example of that. Like, I like the resilience they're showing. They're winning games in different ways. They're not necessarily just dominating. The power play is pretty solid. Ryan O'Reilly has been so good. I mean, could you imagine you're the Maple Leafs with Max Domi potentially as your 3C or winger because he doesn't play well down the middle, and Ryan O'Reilly's popping off in Nashville because it always links back to the Leafs. Philip Forsberg's playing great hockey, but Roman Josi is absolutely crushing it. To me, like, MVP-worthy play, Norris-worthy play. So you just see it all coming together for them right now.
Sarah, that Roman Josi overtime goal last night, I mean, it's just killer. I love when the good players are the good players, you know?
Exactly. You want to see the stars. It's exciting.
Stars are starring.
Exactly. Another star who has been starring, Nathan MacKinnon, continues to just be a force. His team, Colorado, now 9-1-0 in their last 10. They sit at second in the Central, 2 points behind Dallas with a game in hand. Colorado just has been doing it all season long. It's impressive how this is a team that has massaged their roster and gotten results. What do you make of bestie Nathan MacKinnon and the Colorado Avalanche?
Gunna's free. I mean, he's been waiting for this. Gunna's been making new music and Nathan's been listening, and this is exactly what's happening. In all seriousness, I mean, he's having the best year of his life. And when he is, I mean, I don't know, off the ice, the best year of his career, but like when he's on, there's nobody more electric to watch. And then you look at, I was doing some research for the Hart Race. Like I'm always trying to keep up on that. And just like his attention to off ice training. His dad was really into training, I guess, growing up and just learning about, he's kind of Rod Brindamore-esque with the way that, like Rod Brindamore with more skill, no offense, Roddy, but just loving the day to day. It makes sense that he's peaking later, his peak hasn't ended because he's taken care of himself so well. He has that competitive edge. And of course the team around him, I mean, Scott Walker at the deadline, good idea. You've seen the Flyers kind of been reeling from the absence of him and the maneuvers again with Casey Mittelstadt. I love it. Even when a player like Byram is gone and he's cooking over in Buffalo land, whatever the fuck is going on over there. They identified a more urgent need for themselves. And I think that's just like what you need to do at the deadline. I'm starting to think like more tweaks that are so improving your, I mean, revolutionary idea here, but not just getting maybe the best guy, but willing to give something up to improve your needs. I don't know. Jared Bednar looks absolutely fucking fire on the bench every single day with his suits and his hair.
Growing the hair.
He's like growing kind of a like gray mullet. Yeah. I'm so here for it. And I don't know. Good for them. That's my review of the Colorado Avalanche. Thanks for coming back to my channel.
Thanks for coming to my TED Talk. Well, there is a team that has actually done enough, as impressive as the teams we've talked about are, that has done enough to be the first to clinch an actual playoff spot, and that is the New York Rangers. They get it done last night. Boston can tonight with 1 point. But let's talk about the Rangers. We already talked about Panarin, but Shayna, it does seem to be a just reward that the Rangers are for sure 100% locked and loaded for games past number 82.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It comes last night, like a night where they're missing three of their regular defenders, or without Lindgren, Trouba, and Gustafsson, and like you can see that third pair was struggling last night. And it was such an exciting game against the Flyers too. Like anytime the Rangers gave up like an odd man rush, the Flyers were converting on their chances, and it was really back and forth. But I like to, like, they're winning games in different ways. You're seeing they look a lot more complete, and they're doing something different under Peter Laviolette. You can see they're tweaking lines when they don't need to. Like, some coaches, like, we can't change the lines after wins. But you can see, like, they have 13 forwards they want to be ready for the playoffs, and they keep making little line adjustments to pretty much every line that's not Panarin's, just to see what works to keep everyone fresh for the playoffs. And it's so different from the Gallant era, which I think sets them ahead. You know, there's still things that they can work and be a little bit more adaptable with. But I think that when you have a cushion like they do, you just want to make yourself better for the playoffs. In Colorado, the year they won, they were so ahead of everybody else that in the regular season, you saw Bednar just start fucking with the lines to go, I want to know this is in my back pocket.
Well, we'll see. Here they go. The Rangers are in. We'll see if Boston gets in tonight. Teams are going to start to get in as also teams fall out, but we will not talk about them today. We do want to thank, I don't know how much you guys saw, I shared some of it, but we do want to thank everyone who did join in the spleen discourse. We hope to have an MVP joining us. A friend of the pod, Katie Spence, has some intimate knowledge of how the spleen affects your life. And so we're going to try and get her on to share actual impact of no longer how does this affect the Leafs, but hashtag how does this affect the spleen, coming soon to a Too Many Men episode near you. But let's end this episode the way that we are in March, Women's History Month. We're almost out. So this is going to be our last official one. We may have to carry this on if we have other people we want to shout out, but we wanted to recognize amazing women in this hockey space by doing more than just giving them a makeover. I'm not going to comment on that little episode that a certain team did, but let's talk about some awesome kick-ass women that we know and that deserve a little bit more of the spotlight. Shayna, you are up.
Okay, I'm going with someone we talked about earlier. I am shouting out Nadine Muzzarol, who is a badass coach, showing everyone how it's done with Ohio State. I am not going to stop clamoring for her to get more opportunities. I want to see more women behind the bench at all levels of play, and we're starting to see it a little bit more. But, you know, I feel like everybody's so willing to dip into the pool at the men's level and go, okay, who's killing it at the NCAA level? Like, expand your minds, friends, because there is someone there who I want to see her go toe-to-toe coaching against John Tortorella. That is personally what I want to see, because I feel like they have similar strategies and mindset. Exactly. And they, like, there's so many similarities that I'm like, I either want to see them work together or against each other. I don't care. I don't care if they have to tear each other down in a game, or they're screaming at each other on the bench, or if they're working together. Like, to me, that could be a powerhouse.
They are friends. And actually, I was part of getting them introduced. Look at that. Sarah, who's your awesome woman?
Oh, I've been going women with unconventional career paths in sports lately. Rosie, stop. Oh my God, this annoying dog. I will go Katie Nolan this time. I think it's the path she's created for herself is something I admire. And she doesn't have a problem trying new things and then saying no when they don't stick. And she's kind of like dips her toes in all these kinds of different things. And I just think it's pretty unique. And it's one of those things where maybe women think to themselves, like, that's not possible, because like, it's just not even something they aspire to because they don't know. So she's really done a good job of like paving a way for somebody else to do literally anything, like be on Jeopardy, be on Apple TV, be on YouTube TV, be on any podcast. I don't know. I love kind of the commentary space she's in.
Awesome. We love both of those women. I'm going to stick it just like you did, Sarah, with my theme, which is wonderful people who are part of the Kraken. And this person has a birthday coming up, about to enter her dirty 30s. Sarah, you know her, you love her as well. Oh. Lindsay Brown, who works in the Kraken PR department, is a goddamn force. First of all, she's funny as hell. She is so quick-witted. She is lovely. But what stands out to me and what impresses me is I have watched this human take on new and different significant challenges, sometimes not even expecting to have to, and just crush it with professionalism, with calm, with composure, with intelligence. And I just love seeing her thrive. And I truly, truly, truly believe that this is a person destined for massively great things. And I couldn't be prouder to know her. Happy birthday, Lindsay. We love you. All right.
Love ya. We do love ya. We'll get two love ya's today. Wow. Loves ya.
Wow.
Seven. Loves ya.
All right. Well, that will do it for us this week. We thank you all for joining us on the episode, which you can also find on YouTube. It's youtube.com/@symbol2_much_man. That is the same handle that we use for social media, where we are on both Instagram and the Twitter. It will always be the Twitter. We love seeing all the shout outs for Too Many Men calls. We love all the spleen discourse. Keep it coming. We see it. We love it. If you want to support Too Many Men outside of the internet, you can buy your own merch. Go to TooManyMenMerch.com. Hats, sweatshirts, t-shirts, beautiful toques, beautiful embroidered toques, beautiful embroidered baseball caps. Mine came in the mail. I love them. You should have them too. Notebooks, anything your heart desires, it's there for you. And until we talk again, we encourage you to do something, no matter how big or small, to make sure that hockey truly is for everyone. We will talk to you soon.
Love you. And thank you, anybody who has sent nice messages my way for the mess I get myself into. Thanks for tolerating me and having my back. Seriously, love you.
Bye. We'll be right back.